Hi, this is Billy Dwan. I play for the Syracuse Orange. Welcome to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my Blue Jay buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, great show this week, including a preview of the biggest games coming up, and there's a bunch of good ones. And as you heard on the intro, we're joined by Syracuse junior All-American defenseman Billy Dwan for a terrific conversation as he and the Orange get set to take on Notre Dame this Saturday. Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, it's April. This is the stretch. This is the stretch of the conference season. As we think we know things about teams, things are falling into place. And then there's other teams that are in their conference chasing that league tournament berths for their teams so that they can get into the league tournament and go for that automatic qualifier that is so important for a lot of teams, especially on outside of the few biggest conferences. How are you feeling as we get into April?
Feel good. I wish the weather would stop playing with us. Monday was close to 80 degrees, if not over 80 degrees. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, now in the 50s. Don't like those big weather swings. It's all relative too, because if we were having this conversation a month ago, 50 degrees, 55 degrees would be tropical. But when you get teased with that warm weather, so I wish the weather would stabilize. But we're starting to see some crystallization of conference races, teams who are the contenders, who might be pretenders. It's all starting to come into focus, and we're getting ready for this stretch run.
Yeah, a stretch run to the NCAA championship weekend. And if you want to go, we have a deal for our listeners. They're coming back to Gillette Stadium for the first time since 2017, from May 23rd to May 26th. There's nowhere else to be in the lacrosse world than Foxborough, Massachusetts, for 8 of the best and most impactful games of the season. You can see the men's and women's semifinals and championships, along with the men's D2 and men's D3 title games, all in one weekend in one place. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single-day ticket options by using the code ILPOD at checkout. So head to ncaa.com/LaxTickets and enter ILPOD, ILPOD, at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to the championship weekend, so why not get $5 off and help us show the NCAA how awesome our D-Fly and Dixie listeners are by purchasing your tickets today using our promo code. Once again, that's ncaa.com/LaxTickets, promo code ILPOD at checkout for $5 off your tickets to championship weekend. Dixie, a small sampling of midweek games, just two on the calendar this week, but they were opportunities for the Ivy League, Cornell and Princeton, right now, probably the two top Ivy League teams to get their offense going. Cornell 18-11 win over Albany, Princeton 17-12 maybe over a Lehigh team. Both of those, Albany and Lehigh, are underwater, struggling as they go into their conference seasons. CJ Kerr, 6 goals. He now has 55 points on the season. I mean, is he running away with the Tuareton at this point?
I think Kirst is running away with the Tuareton. He's established himself as the best player in the country. It reminds me of 2013 when another big red attackman, Rob Pinnell, just had a great season and kind of really distanced himself earlier in the season than other years. But Kirst is impressive. Cornell continues to roll. Princeton knocks off a Lehigh team that had only scored 7 goals against Loyola, won 7-3 this past weekend, and they're able to, Princeton's able to put up all those goals, and Lehigh scored a lot more goals. So I think you're looking at two teams in the Big Red and the Tigers that play at a very up-tempo style and put a lot of pressure on you offensively.
All right, let's get into our game previews. There's six games on our slate of games to preview. Five of them are legit top 20 matchups, and there's one top 10 game that highlights this week's schedule. First game up, number 12, Duke. They're 8-3 on the season. Travel up to Boston to face the number 15th ranked Terriers, who are 8-2. The game's at 1 o'clock, and fans can catch this on ESPN Plus. These schools have met 6 times since 2014. Duke has won all six of them, including a really thrilling back and forth 11-10 victory last year on a rainy Wednesday afternoon in March down in Durham. This should be a really good game.
Remember that last year was a very slick track at Koskinen and chilly, cold, all the things you really kind of hate as a lacrosse player and as a lacrosse fan. I like the fact that Duke is going to Boston. It's cool when the more established program, when you sign the home and home series, that they'll go on the road. You don't always have to go to Tobacco Road to play Duke, which is great. Be a great trip because that area of the country is just beautiful and tends to have better weather, but last year notwithstanding. But all of a sudden Duke finds itself in a little bit of trouble, losing two consecutive games. They got blown out by Denver, and then they got blown out again by Notre Dame this past weekend. So Duke looking to get back on track. BU, after the high of beating Army, came back to earth, losing to Harvard. So now the Terriers with another opportunity to get a good out of conference win, seemingly. We'll see if they can knock off Duke, what value that win will hold, because again, Duke has taken a hit. And when you look at Duke's body of work, nothing really jumps out at you as like a really impressive win. And this could fit that bill, going on the road, playing at Nickerson. We'll see who comes out on top. But yeah, to your point, two teams looking to rebound.
It's not the only big game that's in New England this weekend. As two old Ivy League rivals, Harvard and Dartmouth will square off at 1 o'clock on ESPN Plus. But this year is different. This is the first time in history these two teams are both ranked in the top 20 when they play each other. Number 11, Harvard, is 7-2 overall. And so is Dartmouth, the number 18th ranked team. They're 7-2. Both teams are 1-1 in the Ivy League, and they're trying to get a leg up on each other. And this should be, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, the most interesting Harvard-Dartmouth matchup in history.
I don't think you're really going out on a limb, quite frankly, but you do you. So, Harvard playing with a lot of confidence. We saw them really take apart a talented BU team midweek last week. Then they played Binghamton this past weekend and handled the Bearcats. So, they're playing really confident lacrosse. Dartmouth lost at home to Princeton, but it was a competitive game. And actually, the Green had an opportunity to cut into the Princeton lead late in the game. They intercepted a clearing pass, and it was a one-on-one. I believe it was Jesse who scored the game winner in overtime against Penn. And Ryan Craddock made a ridiculous save to keep that game a two-goal game instead of Dartmouth cutting the deficit down to one and then going back to the face-off dot with, I think, about 45 seconds left in the game. So, Dartmouth is playing with confidence as well. They're going to need a complete effort against Harvard to get the W. This will be fun. I think this will be a fun game. The Big Green continue to impress and take steps towards not only respectability, but legitimacy in terms of being a contender, not only to make the Ivy League tournament, but maybe to win the automatic qualifier. So this one will be go a long way toward that end goal.
Next game up on our schedule, number 3, Ohio State will invade Homewood Field to face the number 17 Blue Jays. 2 p.m. This game's on ESPNU. It's homecoming at Homewood. Hopkins leads this series all time 11-7. Hopkins won the last two, including an 11-10 overtime win in Columbus last April. But the teams come into this one really on different trajectories. The Blue Jays really need a win this weekend.
Homecoming at Hopkins. What a great weekend. You got the lacrosse game, you got the Fiji Islander, the campus is alive. I think the only drawback, the weather's not looking great for Saturday. Mid to high 50s with the possibility of rain. That's always a bummer, man, because the Islander is just such a, used to be at least, I don't know what it's like these days. It used to be such a great party when it was warm out, flowers are blooming, and you showed us your green thumb last week with all your flower selections. But we'll see. You know, we'll see what holds this weekend. But Ohio State continues to roll. Tough conference victory over Rutgers at home last weekend. Hopkins, meanwhile, continues to struggle and dropped a tough road game to Michigan. And the offense just seems really out of whack for Hopkins. And that's not good news in any given day of the week. But when you have Ohio State coming to town with arguably the best defense in the country, when you consider Big Tasty in the goal, the close defense led by Bobby Van Buren and their sled dogs, the short stick defensive midfielders, you know, led by guys like Greg Langemeyer, it's going to be a tall order for Hopkins. Russell Melendez missed the Michigan game. What is his status for this contest? This one's going to be a tough one for Hopkins. This is a must win. They're 0-2 in the Big Ten, and they need a conference victory bad because then this is their last home game of the season. They then go on the road to Penn State and then go on the road to College Park to play Maryland on a Friday night. So this is danger zone time for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and sitting at 6-4 with those top 10 teams pending with road games, you don't want to drop a few and end up underwater at 6-7 heading into hope. I mean, if they lose those games, they're not really making the Big Ten.
Yeah.
They're a low seed in the Big Ten tournament, and it makes it an uphill climb. And you're looking at we need the automatic qualifier from the Big Ten to get into the NCAA tournament. So must-win game for the Blue Jays, and 2 o'clock on ESPN.
Yeah, Mike Corey and Jules Henneberg will have that call from Homewood.
All right. A couple of big games coming up on the ACC network at 2 and 4 o'clock. The first one is our game of the week. Number 5, Notre Dame will travel to the Dome to take on number 7, right, Syracuse. At 2 o'clock. Before we talk about this game, let's bring in our guest this week, Syracuse junior Billy Dwan. Please welcome into the show the All-American defenseman from Syracuse, junior Billy Dwan. Billy, thanks for joining us on the DFly and Dixie podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Billy, great to see you. I have enjoyed watching your career blossom at Syracuse University after having the opportunity to watch you at Loyola High School for your career. I think there's something that people may not know about you. You played JV as a freshman. And I only bring this up because you've established yourself as not only one of the best defensemen in the ACC, but one of the best defensemen in the country. And in this day and age of high school lacrosse involvement, et cetera, it's almost like, an insult to play JV at any point in your high school career. But you played JV and then had an awesome All-American high school career. Can you take us back to what that experience was like?
Obviously, at the time, I was probably pretty upset. Obviously, the goal was to make varsity and wanted to play there. And I had some guy, a guy in my, another guy in my class, is one of my best friends. He made varsity in same position, so that definitely was a tough pill to swallow in that respect. But also, looking back on it, I wasn't ready for it. And I don't know if, I mean, I wouldn't have played obviously on varsity if I didn't make the team. So riding the bench on varsity or, starting on JV every game, we had like a group of captains. It wasn't like three, it was like a group of us. So I was one of them. And I think that was a great experience for me. Helped me today, I guess. And then obviously along with that too, obviously probably a bunch of guys, but a bunch of Loyola guys that I'm super close with still to this day. We're on that team. So playing with my best friends every day and playing every single minute of the season was probably something super beneficial for me. And then obviously I think gave me the necessary tools, I guess, that I needed. That's the reason I didn't make the team. And then I think it prepared me well for the next year and obviously the following 3 years out or 2 years after the 3 years after that, kind of to put myself in the best position possible come, I guess, college time and come, recruiting time and everything like that.
So, Billy, just to follow up on that, I didn't honestly know that part of your history at Loyola. And one thing I want to ask you is, the opposite happened. You got to a storied college program and got on the field right away, and playing a lot and contributing early and then starting midway through your freshman year. You're an All-American as a sophomore. Were you surprised by your opportunity there and how fast you got on there, or is it something you expected? I mean, I know you have confidence in your abilities, but that your rise in college
Fast.
was fast.
I think also going back to the last question, when I was on, JV the freshman, I didn't really grow into my body yet. I was like a 5'10", 6 foot, 155-pound kid. And then obviously that summer, I think I hit the weight room a lot and kind of, I guess, filled out some, you want to say, instead of being a total string bean. Then obviously when I got here, I think I was just like more confident in myself and my ability and knew what I could do on the field. And then I think that the older guys here, along with Coach Petro, who's the coach at the time, did a great job preparing me. I guess kind of, I mean, I guess I got thrown in the deep end and kind of was just treading water in it. But I think they did a great job preparing me, and the older guys were super good to me, and they still are. A lot of them are still here, seniors and fifth years. And then obviously he kind of, I guess, put me up to speed as fast as possible. And then obviously the first couple of games I just played man down, which I think that was everything I could handle at the time. And then I think as I kind of proved myself, I could do more. They kind of gave me more, I guess, the reins to the defense. And obviously a couple of injuries happened. That's kind of how I got the starting position to start. And then I think once I got that, I kind of didn't want to let it go. And yeah, so I think for, I think the older guys and Coach Petro were kind of to credit more so for kind of, I guess, getting me to speed so quickly of how we do things up here.
You mentioned Coach Petromala and your father, Bill DeJuan Jr., who was a teammate of mine at Hopkins for a year. Pretty high level of familiarity with there. Your father worked with Coach Petromala together on the coaching staff at Hopkins for 20 years. Two-part question. What has your father taught you about the game? And also, was there a little bit of familiarity there that made it easier for you to acclimate to the college game with having Coach Petromala as your coach?
I would say my father's just taught me hard work. And I mean, I think he started playing the game when he was in eighth grade, which obviously now if you heard that, you'd probably think it's pretty crazy, but he hit the wall every day to do thousands and thousands of reps. He didn't play varsity till his junior year. And obviously he ended up having an All-American career down at Hopkins. So just hard work, and you can do anything you want to do if you put your mind to it. I'd say that's kind of what my dad's taught me. And I think that goes into when I was little, me and him laying on the floor watching film every day. That's kind of, I guess, given me, I guess, the cerebral sense of the game. And then Coach Petro, I'd say, definitely just gave me a familiarity. I grew up with him my whole life, and him and Dominic and Nicholas, and seeing what those guys are doing at UNC is pretty cool. But I think just seeing, obviously just seeing, I knew how he ran his defense before I got here. I kind of didn't know all the terms because obviously he switched it up, but I knew like the ins and outs of the defense and kind of what he wanted to accomplish. So I think that kind of gave me a familiarity. And I think just seeing someone you've been around your whole life, and me kind of taking the chance of coming up here to Syracuse, I didn't know too many people coming in. So to have like a defensive coordinator that I was super close with and familiar with, and like he definitely got on me just as much or more than anyone. It was definitely tough on me just because I think he wanted a lot from me. But I think that, at the end of the day, like he, put his arm around me, tell me he loved me. So I think just having a guy like that, definitely starting your college career off with is definitely something super huge and something that was pretty big for me.
Getting back to the Hopkins edge, if you will, Dom and Nick, as members of North Carolina, got to play on Homewood Field earlier this season. You haven't had that opportunity
No.
because it was neutral site last year against Hopkins, and then you played them twice in the dome. What were you thinking if you were able to watch highlights of that game, talk to Dom and Nick, and then do you welcome an opportunity to maybe next year play on Homewood Field against Johns Hopkins?
I definitely texted those guys. I watched that game. I don't think I watched it live, just I think we had a game or something, but I watched it the next day. And I texted those guys saying congrats on the win, kind of thing, probably an emotional game. And then obviously I'd love to go there and play, obviously for personal reasons, definitely. But, and then on another note, just like it's a historic field and like the dome, I think everybody should experience it at least once. But Definitely would love to go back home, play in that field. A lot of history there, a lot of personal, I guess, emotions, memories there, whatever you want to call it. So definitely would look forward to going back there at some point in my college career. I mean, if it's next year or not, I don't think it's going to make or break it, but I definitely have it circled on my calendar for sure.
What was your recruiting process like? You established yourself as one of the best high school defenders, and you're a Maryland kid, and you end up at Syracuse, something that hasn't happened often. It's happening more frequently now. Players like Brendan Curry, you have a teammate, Wyatt Hoddle, who's an MIAA kid from Calvert Hall. How did your path take you to the Dome?
So I guess my dad always told me growing up when he was coaching at Hopkins with Coach Petro for that run, he kind of always just told me, like, besides Syracuse, the team with the most history and tradition and fans were, was always Syracuse. So I think that kind of stuck in my head. And obviously when he got when him and Coach Petro left Hopkins and got fired and everything like that, I think that kind of stuck with me. And obviously I wasn't going to go to Hopkins anymore, even though that was the dream for the first 16 years of my life or whatever it was. So I got and then I guess I got recruited by almost everywhere, and obviously a lot of schools reached out, which I'm super grateful for. And I kind of came down to Syracuse, Loyola, and UNC. So those were the three for me. And I guess Loyola is if I wanted to stay close to home, and then obviously UNC and Syracuse are both great schools. So obviously came down to Syracuse, and then had to I told my uncle I wasn't going to go to Loyola, which obviously was a pretty tough phone call to have. Killed me inside a little bit, but he was super good about it. Gives me his hard time still here and there, but no, he was great about it. And so that's kind of how I chose Syracuse, just the history, tradition, the culture, and then obviously all the fans and everything like that. I don't think there's anything like it. And then obviously playing the Dome's pretty cool too, so.
That really hurts. I would have loved to have seen you at either Loyola or North Carolina, selfishly, because then you'd be playing with my kids. So, but it seems like it's worked out real well for you.
So you mentioned your uncle, Matt, coaches at Loyola, and your dad, longtime coach, very well known. Coaching is sort of like the family business. Have you ever considered what you want to do after Syracuse and maybe having a future in the game of lacrosse?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I see what they're doing with the PLL and stuff now. I'd love to do that for some time at least and try and give that a try and see how it goes. For me, obviously, I always say the dream is to stay in lacrosse for I don't know what like capacity or what it is, but I'd always like to be involved in the game. I just think it's such a tight-knit community. It's given me so much that I'd love to give back to it to some extent. I'd definitely coach. I'd definitely consider it. I don't really know what I want to do. Junior year of college, me saying that, which is pretty crazy, but. No, I don't know what I want to do. I kind of let it all kind of happen as it is. I'd try and definitely play professional if that opportunity was given to me. But then outside of that, I definitely maybe try and coach to I don't know what level, just to stay involved in the game and stay with it and see where it kind of takes me.
One of the things that people notice about you when they watch you play is you've got great size and you're very physical, but you also have incredible hands and an amazing offensive stick. I got to see it in high school. Now we're seeing it in college. You are not a stranger to scoring goals, scoring points, making assists. Where does that come from?
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess I watched a lot of lacrosse growing up. I kind of see how like the momentum swings of the game happens. So I think pole goals are definitely a big momentum changer and kind of deflating to the other team. And then I think just the hands and everything. I try and watch a lot of lacrosse and take away stuff from guys' games and especially family members and stuff like that. So I definitely was in the backyard a lot as a kid. I don't even know if it was intentional or not, just playing backyard lacrosse. So I think that kind of started. And then I guess it was maybe my senior year of high school. I kind of started just trying new things with a long pole. And then I think that's kind of carried over here. But in terms of like who I got it from, obviously I watched a lot of great defensemen through the years. So I tried to watch some of my Uncle Matt's tapes and stuff like that and try and take away some from him. And then obviously I watched a lot of like Brody Merrill growing up, and I watched a lot of other defensemen that I kind of try and take just little things from just to evolve my game. So and then obviously the offensive side of things. I mean, obviously I take a lot from those two guys, but also I watched my teammates here at Syracuse, and I see, like guys that do stuff in practice every day with short sticks, and I try to just emulate it with a long pole. So I guess that's kind of where it originates from. And I try it in practice, and if it works, maybe try it in a game if I'm lucky. So that's kind of, I guess, how I play the game and how I play my game. So.
So Billy, let's talk about the team a little bit. It's the Orange are 8-2. Got your first ACC win of the season last week against Virginia. You'll play Notre Dame this week. How would you best characterize this Orange team halfway through the 2025 season?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're just a really close-knit group of guys, and I think obviously we dropped two games early, and obviously both the good teams, so they beat us with all respect there and everything like that. I think for us, it's just we're obviously far from a finished product. So us, we're just trying to get better every single day. So obviously, I think Coach O'Dearness said it when we dropped a tough one against Harvard. He kind of looked around the room and said it, like no one won or lost the national championship today. So obviously, with that, we're just trying to get better every day. And obviously, we play Notre Dame this weekend. We can't beat them this weekend if we don't beat like practice today and lift today and all of like treatment today and everything like that. So that's what we're just trying to do, get better every single day, win today. And then obviously, I think for us, it's just we're gonna go to battle for each other and we're gonna stick up for each other. And at a place like Syracuse, where sometimes the media isn't the biggest fans of us, or the fans get hard on us or whatever it may be, we're gonna have each other's back when no one else does. So us against everybody.
Obviously, your defensive coordinator, John Odierna, and then the offensive coordinator, Pat March. So you probably spend most of your time with your defensive coach. But what's it like playing for Gary Gate?
It's awesome. Obviously, such a great player and like the Michael Jordan of lacrosse, if you will. And I think, for him, I guess he kind of takes the pressure off of everything, and he has like, a light, happy mood. And he's always, for a guy that has, I guess, a lot of pressure on him running his own company with his brother and being the head coach of a storied program like Syracuse, just to see how light he is and how happy he is all the time, I guess it's pretty impressive. And obviously, just being saying you're being coached by one of the greatest of all time, and you could be talking, I guess, lacrosse or life or whatever, everything in between. And he'll always have a good conversation with you. And he's always bringing out new sticks, new heads. He brought a new one out yesterday that looked pretty cool. So, he's always trying new things, trying to give us the edge on the field, whatever it is. And obviously has your back if it's off the field.
You'll play Notre Dame Saturday afternoon. It's a big game. It's the biggest game of the week, probably. And what you've been practicing all week, seeing them on film without giving the game plan away, what do the Orange need to do on Saturday to get a victory in the dome?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Notre Dame's such a great team, back-to-back champions. Obviously, I think everybody's super excited for the game. Just when you have a big-time ACC game in the dome, I don't think there's anything like it. I think for us, just there's going to be ups, going to be downs, but just staying level-headed and just make the next right play, and obviously try and win the loose ball battle, trying to I guess dominate every statistical category there is. But in reality, is that going to happen? I don't know. But just for us, it's going to be just a dog fight, and obviously there's going to be ups and downs and everything in between. But for us, just staying level-headed and trying to make the next right play, if it's a ground ball, a stop, a save, a goal, a shot, whatever it is, just doing the next right little thing to try and put ourselves in the position where it's in the fourth quarter and we're in the game. So they're a great team. I think we have a lot of respect for them. I think everybody just kind of ready to go, get the ball rolling for Saturday.
All right, ready for some quick hitting questions?
All right, let's do
A
it.
little lighter.
Yeah.
Who's your all-time favorite sports team?
The New York Giants.
And who's your favorite athlete of all time?
I'll go right now. I'll go Aaron Judge.
Your family's in town for a game. Where's the best food in Syracuse? Where do you go after a game to eat?
The best food in Syracuse is Possibilities. For my family, they kind of go home a lot, so we'll go something quick. We'll go like the tailgate, or we'll go like Varsity. Varsity is always a good spot. There's like a bunch of spots in Marshall Street, maybe Five Guys or something before they kind of hit the road quickly.
Syracuse is known for its great athletic program. When you're not playing lacrosse, who's your favorite Orange team to go watch play?
I'll go right now. I'll say football. They had a good fall, a good season. Definitely a lot of fun when they get going. So
What's your favorite thing about your hometown of Baltimore?
I just say the sense of community, and I guess it's a small town feel, and obviously it's in a big area, and just the private schools and I guess the lacrosse matchups, as cringy as that sounds, the Tuesday and Friday games and all of, the big time matchups there. So
Who's the best chef on the Syracuse lacrosse team? Getting together for some food.
This is gonna be a tough one. It might have some feedback. I'm gonna go. I'll go Michael Leo.
And what's Leo's specialty?
He's a big like Italian. I think it's more of his parents bringing up food and him kind of sending it in the team group chat. But He sends in some good meals, it looks like. So I'd say he's the best cook. It might be his mom, but we'll see.
What's the best Syracuse lacrosse tradition?
I think the run out pregame is pretty cool. You're the two lines and in starting lineups. I think it's the only place in college lacrosse that does that, which I think is pretty cool, and I think it's definitely pretty special.
What's your favorite restaurant to go for a team meal when you guys are on the road?
I'm a big fan of Maggiano's. It's down in Carolina. We go there every year because we'll either play at Carolina or at Duke. So Maggiano's a good one. We went to a place my freshman year, like Franco's something on Long Island. Obviously good Italian Long Island food. So those are probably the two.
All right. If Dix or I walk into the orange locker room, two-part question: who's running the aux and what's playing in the locker room before practice?
Before practice, I mean, I honestly don't even know the songs. I'm not a huge rap guy, but it's probably Carter Rice, Michael Leo, Jimmy McCool, the three. If it's Jimmy McCool, it's country. If it's Carter Rice or Michael Leo, it's like EDM or rap.
All right, last question. I've asked a few guys who have been on the podcast this season the same question. You're from a storied lacrosse program, Loyola Blakefield, Roll Dons, and if you're
Roll
making
Dons.
a Mount Rushmore of Loyola Blakefield lacrosse, who goes on it? And I will let
Is.
Dixie help you with this if you want to chime in, because I'm sure you've got thoughts
Yeah,
on
we
some
could
of the
have a
players.
conversation about this. I'd definitely go Steel Stanley's, I'd say, on there.
Okay.
He's probably number one. I'm probably missing some more old timer guys, I guess. I'd probably throw Matt Dunn on there. Oof. Yeah, Rubior, I'd say. Ben Rubior is probably on there. And then for a fourth, Dixie, you got one or?
I got a bunch. I mean, me growing up, it would be maybe one of the Welsh brothers, Pat or Tim Welsh,
Yeah, Carolina guys. Yeah,
were
they're good players.
fantastic.
Yeah.
My classmate and one of my best friends, Craig Ronald, is another defender that was pretty good back in the
Yeah.
day. Yeah, there's been a lot.
Yeah, there's been a lot of greats at Blakefield, I'd
Gotta
say.
have like the Hawes on there, right?
Great call, John Hawes,
Yeah.
defender Joe Bresci,
Yeah.
Don, yeah. You could look at goalies, Kevin Farrington, one of my teammates, Tom Greninger. It's a lot of guys, man. But
Yeah.
I'm impressed, man. That's a good list you pulled
Yeah, you
there,
pulled a good
really.
list.
That's a
Yeah, I'd
good
say,
list.
yeah,
That's
I'd say
good.
Steele, Dunn, Rubior, and then one of the guys Dixie says I kind of met you. So
Yeah,
no, but yeah, those are the four I'd kind of, or three I'd say, and then the fourth I think is just up for debate. I think all those there's
it's
so many great players to come through Blakefield, so definitely a storied program in that respect too, which is pretty cool to see, and I guess play for and have a history there with.
I like how we did this. It's like a Hall of Fame vote. You know, there's like,
Yeah.
you know, the of the this year's class, and then you go to like the old time committee, who's
Yeah.
Dixie, the old guy, to get
Yeah.
like
Yeah, I
the
am the old time now.
get
I
like
mean, shoot, I
before.
mean, you could talk. I mean, you want to talk about middies like Scott Diggs, Jim Busick was a teammate of mine, Jeff Wills, an attackman.
Mike
I
Kimmel.
mean, Mike
You can go
Kimmel,
Conrad
God.
too, was in
Yeah,
there.
Ryan Conrad's pretty good.
Conrad, God. Yeah, it's a good place. Good place.
Yeah. Hey, Billy, thank you so much for joining us on the Defy Dixie podcast, and best of luck to you and your teammates throughout the season.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to the Defy and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. For more on Simplicity Group, go to simplicitygroup.com. It was great to talk to Billy. Really great interview, candid, gave good answers, really good conversation.
No doubt. And Bill Dwan, his dad, Bill Dwan Jr., I guess, because Billy Dwan the third, he was a senior when I was a freshman at Hopkins, and he's just one of those guys from day one, was just a good guy, always looked out for the younger guys and always a lot of fun, just salt of the earth kind of guy. And it's easy to see why Billy's such a good kid. And he's a force, man. I mean, he is a terrific defender, great lacrosse player. A lot of guys will say if he didn't play defense, he could easily pick up a shorty and be a great offensive player, probably in the midfield, a handful dodging. So yeah, it was really fun to talk to him.
Yeah, for sure. So this is a big time game between top 10 ACC foes. Can you believe Notre Dame has won the last seven straight in this series, including a win, 14-12 win last year in South Bend? How do you see this game playing out?
I am surprised that it's been seven in a row for Notre Dame. I didn't know that. Obviously, you would think the last couple of seasons with the success the Irish has had. Anish Shroff, Paul Carcaterra will have the call from the JMA Wireless Dome. It's always going to be the Carrier Dome to me, but that's the official title of it now. Wow, how does this one play out? Syracuse went down on the road, knocked off Virginia and Charlottesville, hard-fought game. Notre Dame was dominant at home against Duke. Look, all signs point to this being a dogfight. Notre Dame seems to be hitting its stride after losing two in a row. Syracuse, Billy mentioned it. They lost two games early in the season that they felt like they should have had. So this is going to be a really, really good game. For Syracuse, how do they defend Notre Dame? How do they limit Jake Taylor? How do they limit Chris Kavanaugh? The face-off situation, I think Syracuse has the edge there. Goaltending, two new starters. They're not new anymore, but two new starters that every game becomes the biggest game of their season as they continue their maturation. This is going to be must-see TV. Notre Dame and Cuse on Saturday.
And in the second game of that ACC Network doubleheader, Virginia travels down to Chapel Hill to take on the eighth-ranked Tar Heels. Virginia's 5-5, dropped their ACC opener to Syracuse last week. North Carolina is 7-2, and this will be their debut in the ACC this season. It's a 4 o'clock on ACC Network.
Right on. And it'll be Chris Cotter pulling double duty. He'll have the Boston College North Carolina gigantic women's game at 11 a.m. from Dorrance Field. And then he'll stick around with Quint to do the men's game at 4 o'clock. So shout out Chris Cotter. Where do you start with this one? North Carolina, their struggles in the ACC have been well documented over the last few seasons. They're coming off of a loss to Army, where the big thing for Carolina is, so they lose by a goal to Princeton, they lose by a goal to Army, and the thing that you watch is they had the ball. They had the final possessions in each of those games, and their execution at end of game was just not probably where they want it to be. So what adjustments can you make there? You hope you don't need it against Virginia, who comes in. I thought the Cavaliers played a really good game against Syracuse and had an opportunity to win that game. They had an early lead and they just couldn't make the plays down the stretch to knock off the Orange at Klöckner. Look, it's the same stuff for Virginia week in, week out. Need more midfield production. Need some certain offensive players to really kind of step up and make good plays at critical moments. I think Matt Nunes has established himself as the goaltender at Virginia. He's played well since winning that role back. But make no mistake about it, this is Alumni Day at North Carolina. I think it's going to be a great crowd. I haven't seen a weather forecast, but it's always beautiful in Chapel Hill. Look, we're talking about goaltenders. Mike G needs to step up his game. He really does. He needs to play like that all Ivy, all American selection that he enjoyed his career at Princeton. This will be a good game. It'll be a fun environment. It'll be a good game, and I'm looking forward to catching it.
Yeah, should be a great one. 4 o'clock, ACC Network, big game for both teams. There's just one game on Sunday, jumps out. It's been listed as a Saturday on the Inside Lacrosse website, but you are going to be there and have travel plans to get to Michigan. So
So I sure do hope it's on Sunday.
I'm trusting you. It's also listed on Michigan's website as hosting this game on Sunday. Number 9, Penn State. Take on the number 13th ranked Michigan Wolverines at noon in Ann Arbor on the Big Ten Network. You'll be calling this game. Penn State down Michigan 14-8 in the regular season last year, but the Wolverines got their payback in a big way in the Big Ten championship game when they just crushed the Nittany Lions 16-4. I'm sure that will be on the minds of the Nittany Lions as they head into this game. Penn State's also 0-2 in the Big Ten, so they need a win on Sunday at noon.
I'll be with Jack Kaiser calling this game for Michigan Lacrosse Stadium. And they've just done a great job of building not only a quality lacrosse team, the two-time Big Ten tournament champions, two consecutive NCAA tournament appearances, but being at Michigan Lacrosse Stadium, not big, 2,000, 2,500 people. People are coming to see the Wolverines. They're packing the place, and it's been a great environment. You saw it last week in the game against Johns Hopkins. So
It's still called just the Michigan Lacrosse Stadium.
I believe so, yeah. It doesn't have
Can
any.
we call it the Little House?
If you want to, you
They're
can.
packing it. They're
If you
packing the
want to be a
Little
jerk
House.
about it, you can call it the Little House.
Oh, their football stadium's a big house.
Right?
Michigan Lacrosse Stadium is a nice name, but it needs some type of nickname. It's not Koskinen or Homewood or let's call it the little house.
You go right ahead. You go right ahead. It does remind me of low-key quality TV from ages ago. And I'll search on my Verizon cable. I'll start at like channel 710, which is MTV. And then I'll make my way up, eventually getting to AMC, which is, I don't know what AMC is, it American Movie Classics or something like
I
that?
think that's what it called,
Okay.
like, yeah, the
And
network is
there's
called.
typically a good movie on, whenever you do that ascension up
You
the
find
channel.
something. You find
But if
something.
you go a channel or two higher, I don't think it's Hallmark, but it's another, but Little House on the Prairie reruns sometimes will be running. And I find myself watching them. It's
Do you
just
know what
Michael
kind
Landon
of,
was.
you talk about flowers, talk about cheese, and now you're talking about Little House on the Prairie?
I know.
We're
I
gonna get
know.
slaughtered for this.
My man card is definitely getting revoked. But it's just funny, man, watching you got that one, the one lady.
Michael Landon
Michael
was the
Landon was the star. Melissa Gilbert
Oh yeah, sure.
was his one
The
of his
little girl, right?
daughters. Yeah. But then you have, and I don't know the woman's name in the show or the actress name, but you have that one Karen that runs the like the bed and breakfast, and she's always nosing into other people's business. And since she, and it's fun to watch her get hers, and her husband's like a good dude, rational. And so
Is
yeah,
that
it's just.
the show that Deacon Jones was on? The old like San
No,
Diego Merlin Olsen. Yeah,
Merlin
Merlin
Olsen.
Olsen. Deacon Jones. Merlin Olsen was on Little House on the Prairie, though, right?
Yeah, Deacon Jones and Merlin Olsen are real easy to confuse.
I think he played a deacon on the show. Isn't he some type of religious man?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I
But
but
Merlin
I but
Olsen is
I
the guy
again
I'm
I
thinking
don't
of.
watch it that closely to,
But he was a defensive lineman. They were on the same
Oh,
front
for
four,
sure.
right?
And Merlin Olsen was a terrific football analyst in his most playing days.
That's what I remember. Michael Landon and Merlin Olsen. That's it.
While we're talking about acting, meanwhile, tough day, tough day. R.I.P. Val Kilmer.
Yeah, I'm your
Sucks.
Huckleberry.
Oh my God. Everybody remembers him for Iceman in Top Gun, which is, it's cool. I never really paid much attention to Top Gun, but him in Tombstone as
Tombstone.
Doc Holliday.
It's
It's one of my
amazing.
favorite movies. He was so good.
Played Jim Morrison in the
Played Jim
Doors
Morrison in
movie.
The Doors. Yeah.
Yeah, he had some great characters.
Big
Just
time.
some.
Big time. So yeah.
Hey, back to Penn State and Michigan.
I know. We digress. Penn State. Yeah, I've covered their last two games, losing the game to Ohio State at home, then they go on the road and just made a lot of mistakes against Maryland, and it cost them. They gave up a number of transition goals. They went zone against Maryland for the majority of that game, which is a little bit un-Penn State like, but they ran it. Michigan, meanwhile, has made a couple of personnel changes on the offensive end that have benefited them really, really well. Their goaltender, Hunter Taylor, continues to play at a really high level. So this is, much like Hopkins, man, this is must-win territory for Penn State. Conventional wisdom says you win three games, you make it to the Big Ten tournament. I don't know if it's going to happen this year with what we've seen. We've seen Ohio State rolling, Michigan's rolling. Maryland lost that game to Michigan, but they looked terrific this past weekend against Penn State, and then Rutgers dropped the game to Ohio State this past weekend. But the conference seems as competitive as ever, as close as ever. So this one is going to be this one, 12 noon on the Big Ten Network, must see TV on Sunday.
All right, it's time for this week's give and go. And Dixie, my question to you, and I'll get to my bigger point, but what are your favorite things about Baltimore? And not just the city, but the whole area. I mean, you're from Catonsville, it's in Baltimore County. I spent a lot of time in Towson and other places. I lived in the city. Now I live in Howard County, but I still identify as like a Baltimore guy. What are your favorite things about Baltimore?
So, for ease's sake, when people say, "Oh, where do you live?" I'll say Baltimore. But I've always had a lot of pride being from Catonsville. I put that, on when I was at Hopkins on the roster. My hometown was Catonsville, Maryland. I had other Catonsville guys that were, playing at the same time I was, and they put down Baltimore. That chaps my butt. Big time. My boys grew up in Ellicott City, Maryland, their hometown, and their rosters, Ellicott City, Maryland. That's where we're from. So, but yeah, I'm a Baltimorean, born and raised here, went to college here, and continue to live in the area. I think the one thing about Baltimore that I love the Ravens and the Orioles. I love the food scene. There's a lot of great restaurants in the city. It's an oldie but a goodie. The prime rib continues to be just outstanding. Little Italy isn't what it was back in the day, but you have your standbys. You've got your Sabatino's and Cipriani's, and wish Dimmimo was still around, but that's long gone. Love lived in Fells Point. Used to work downtown when I was at T. Rowe Price. So just the vibe and all that. I know there's a lot of problems with the city, but for the most part, those are my favorite things about Baltimore.
Yeah, I agree with all of those. I asked you this because I went to Orioles opening day on earlier this week on Monday, and they have a nice pregame, where they introduce all the players on the other team and all each Oriole from the guys in the back of the clubhouse. Like, I mean, they basically my wife wanted to know why they didn't have the ticket office out there, and I'm like, well, they're working right now, but everybody gets introduced. They introduce 100 people. Of course, they booed the Red Sox. They introduced their players, and they're standing out there and to just lengthy boos from all the Orioles fans, which I appreciate. But it's a celebration of the city more than just like, hey, it's being a baseball season and the Orioles are here. Again, I don't go into Baltimore a whole lot anymore now that I Inside Lacrosse is headquartered right at the Inner Harbor, if you didn't know that, and it's in downtown. I worked there for 11 years. I work in Howard County now, close to where I live. I don't have to go into Baltimore much. And I don't miss the commute at all. I mostly only go in for sporting events. But there's great pride in that city. And, they had like the girl who sang the national anthem is an American Idol contestant on currently. And she's from Baltimore and she was great. But she knew the crowd was going to hit the O in
Oh,
the
yeah.
Star Spangled Banner, and she built up for it and let the Orioles crowd have that moment where a lot of other singers kind of just try to go through it and what they had some kids from the Maryland men's and women's basketball teams throw out the first pitch, Derek Queen and Reese, and then two girls from the women's team all together, and then two of them, Derek Queen and the female player, went out. It did Mr. Splash, the splash. So it's just like such a Maryland, Baltimore thing. And the weather was nice, and it was a nice sunny day. It was just most people know Baltimore from TV shows like Homicide and The Wire, and it gets a bad rap, rightfully so for lots of reasons. But it's our town. Right. It's one of those places where no one else is allowed to make fun of Baltimore. We can say whatever we want about Baltimore, but no one else has the right to do that. And all those things that you said, but also not just the food and the scene and the vibe and the sports teams, but the people. The people make Baltimore. And I'm sure everyone says that about every place, but you just go to an Orioles game and you see people from all walks of life, from all parts of Baltimore and the surrounding areas. And you can almost tell where they're from by just what they're wearing, how they carry themselves. And it's just a pleasure. It's just a pleasure.
I get it. Baltimore does have a lot of problems. Yeah, you look at the crime rate. And listen, the sad part about it is the wire ended in what, 2005? And
Maybe.
I work, part of my territory, I'm in the medical field, is in Baltimore. So I go to, and that's another good thing about Baltimore is the medical institutions. When you think of Johns Hopkins and University of Maryland Shock Trauma,
Best in the world.
You look at the wire and I drive through the streets and there's still a ton of vacants and you can see open air drug deals being made and not much has changed from 05 to 2025. I think it's a cycle of corruption that runs in our government that's never ending, but you could say that for a lot of cities. But yeah, the people, like, so again, being in the medical field, you got I've heard patients yelling at their doctors. They don't want to pay $4 for a generic copay, but they'll buy their cigarettes and they'll buy their Ravens shirts and jerseys. They got no problem buying that stuff. They're just born bred Balmer, as old school people will say. So yeah, it's a cool city. Yeah, I enjoy it. It does get a bad rap in a lot of ways. But I tell you, this entire state, man, we're in a tough spot. All these taxes that are coming down on us,
Well, it's
it's
just
crazy.
also, we're a more or less a suburb of DC in a lot of ways, and so many federal employees that have lost their jobs. So even Hopkins, some grant money, $800 million in grant money, they laid off 2,200 people from like Johns Hopkins institution. So that is a trickle down effect on us in a lot of ways, and some bad spending. And budgetary over the many years has left the state in a predicament, and now the people are
We're
it's
feeling
gonna
it.
it, yeah we're gonna feel
BGE's rough, the taxes,
yeah
it's a tough
well
time, man.
but so it's sitting home. It's trickle down effect for sure. Anyway, that seems like a good place to stop. Usually we try to use it on an uplifting
Well,
message,
let's do it.
but
Let's do this. Let's
okay.
do okay. Like you mentioned it though, the attitude of Baltimore. So we're almost considered a suburb of DC. When you talk about the DMV, right? It's District, Maryland, Virginia. Some people will even say it's Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, but we're not Philly and we're not DC. We're right in the middle almost. And a lot of people look at Baltimore as just kind of like a speed bump to get in between, those two larger, more quote unquote prestigious cities. So the chip on our shoulder is gigantic. When you talk about the NFL, how disrespected Baltimore was when the Colts left, and you had the owner of the Redskins at the time, Jack Kent Cook, blocking a team coming back to Baltimore for the NFL. Paul Tagliabue, the former NFL commissioner, what a clown that guy is, was. I'm not even sure if Tagliabue's still with us. But there's an awesome 30 for 30 on ESPN that's about the Baltimore Colts marching band and how it lived on when the Ravens came here. Even when the Colts left, they were still featured in Canton at the Hall of Fame game. And then when the Ravens arrived, David Modell, Art Modell's son, the owner, he was like, "Yep, you're our band." And just watching that reminds you of all the great things about Baltimore. Passion, the fandom, the positivity, just incredible stuff, man. So yeah, Baltimore is, you don't mess with Charm City.
That seems like a good place to stop. Thanks again to our guest, Billy Dwan. Good luck to the Orange this week and throughout the season. A reminder that the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you. by Simplicity Group, our good friends at Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you like what you heard, share it. Share it with a friend. Please subscribe, leave a review, but more importantly, tell a friend, share the love. It's free. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain. We always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dfly@dixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dfly and dixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.